From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
A new Florida law restricting the places unhoused folks can sleep brings some consternation to the Sunshine State.
There will be people who will be arrested because they resist going to shelter.
Also this week, the big push in advance of Election Day is on. Those for and against Florida's constitutional amendment guaranteeing abortion access are kicking up their marketing campaigns.
None of its terms are defined, like healthcare provider or patient's health, and the word doctor never appears.
We'll also bring you a long series of stories about the short-term and long-term impact of last week's Hurricane Helene in Florida. I'm Tom Flanagan, online and on air. This is Capitol Report and the end-of-week wrap-up of top stories from Tallahassee. A new law limiting where homeless people can sleep is now in effect in Florida. Local governments can no longer allow people to sleep in streets, public buildings, or public rights of way. As Margie Menzel reports, the new law has prompted a whole new discussion.
It is both carrot and stick. It is different. We're going to give our local communities the flexibility they need to address the problems in the way that respects the local conditions and is best for their citizens.
That's Representative Sam Garrison, a Fleming Island Republican, talking about House Bill 1365, which he sponsored. The new law has been criticized as an effort to get homeless people out of sight. Beginning in January, local governments can be sued over the issue. During legislative debate over the policy earlier this year, some lawmakers worried about placing additional costs on municipalities that try to comply. Some communities are already spending their own money. The Big Ben's Kearney Center has added 4 staffers, says Executive Director Sonia Wilson, the better to help shelter residents get jobs and permanent housing.
If we come together, we can really not only address do you need socks and underwear, clothes, food, MREs, water, but we can see what other services you need and what's standing in the way between you and getting a job. Or you in housing, is it a Social Security application? What is it?
Lobbyist Ron Book, who chairs the Miami-Dade Homeless Trust, says Miami-Dade has 1,002 homeless individuals as of its August point-in-time survey. 34 years ago, he says, there were more than 8,000. Book supported the bill in committee and is pushing hard to meet the need it created.
Under 1365, while we are always a broad-based continuum, we are working significantly more aggressively in standing up more shelter beds to meet the demand of 1365 and working just as aggressively to create new units of housing.
He says no one should want jails turned into homeless shelters.
There will be people who will be arrested because they resist going to shelter. That will be a consequence of what we're all going through. But what we've got to do is use as advocates, we've got to use 1365 as a calling, as a message to up our games.
The law exempts smaller cities and counties from its mandates while calling on others to create camps that provide sanitation and mental health services. Jonna Coleman, executive director of the Big Bend Continuum of Care, is trying to do that too. She's responsible for 8 counties, where the emergency shelter charges $10 a night for people outside the area.
We cannot afford to take on cases of people from outside our community. We are stressed. We are strapped.
She says HB 1365 should have had an education component.
Not everyone has those built-in relationships that we have in Leon County with city county staff. Not everybody has that. And so we're kind of seeing that play out all kinds of ways throughout the state.
Coleman points to Jacksonville, which has a multi-million-dollar plan to address homelessness that Coleman calls holistic. It includes data, a contact in the mayor's office, beefed up outreach, and an effort to raise private money. Coleman would like to see Leon County create a task force. She says that if any local government set up an encampment, that would be cause for pause for her.
I believe for a lot of COCs, we understand that sanctioned campgrounds is not the way to go. It is pouring a lot of money into a very temporary situation when we could house people for much cheaper than sanctioned encampments.
Communities across the state are trying to comply with the new law without punishing people for being homeless. But on January 1st, a new section of the law will go into effect, giving legal standing to residents to file civil lawsuits against local governments that allow sleeping or camping on public property. I'm Margie Menzel.
Supporters and opponents of abortion rights in Florida are ramping up their final efforts to reach voters before Election Day. At least 60% of voters must approve Amendment 4 for it to pass. This ballot item would amend the state constitution and replace the state's current 6-week ban by expanding access to the procedure until fetal viability. WLRN's Veronica Zadikovia reports on the messaging.
Even with a little time to go before the general election, Archbishop Thomas Wenske feels optimistic that he's got voters yet to reach.
Most people are not really yet paying attention, you know.
Wenske heads the Archdiocese of Miami. He's authored commentaries against Amendment 4, including in the South Florida Sun Sentinel.
I tell people, listen, I'm a bishop. I don't have a Glock on my hip, so I can't impose my views on anybody. The only thing I can do is make my proposal.
His proposal is to vote no on Amendment 4. He's asked clergy at his churches to educate parishioners about the ballot item. Here's how the amendment is written. No law shall prohibit, penalize, delay, or restrict abortion before viability or when necessary to protect the patient's health, as determined by the patient's health care provider. This amendment does not change the legislature's constitutional authority to require notification to a parent or guardian before a minor has an abortion.
It's really a human rights issue. As a Catholic, we would oppose all abortions. We think that abortion should not only be illegal but unthinkable. Even those that might be in favor of abortion in some circumstances should find in this amendment things that would concern them.
The Archdiocese of Miami has donated more than $300,000 to a political action committee called Florida Voters Against Extremism, which is behind a Vote No on 4 campaign.
Amendment 4 says no law shall restrict abortion before viability, but never defines viability.
Viability is defined in Florida statutes as, quote, the stage of fetal development when the life of a fetus is sustainable outside the womb through standard medical measures, end quote. That's typically considered to be about 24 weeks of pregnancy. A group of Florida physicians opposes that the amendment doesn't specify doctors as those who may provide abortions.
None of its terms are defined, like healthcare provider or patient's health, and the word doctor never appears. That's the trick. No definitions means almost no limits.
Meanwhile, supporters of Amendment 4 are focused on what they call government overreach from Florida's 6-week ban. Floridians Protecting Freedom is the committee behind Amendment 4. It launched a paid ad campaign in September, also including doctors in the state.
I'm voting yes on 4 to end the ban so government can't stop women from getting life-saving care.
Other supporters are going right up to people's doors by canvassing, like Mi Vecino, an organization focused on voter education and mobilization.
Okay, everybody, it is our official first day in Palm Beach County.
Devin Murphy Anderson revved up her staff on a warm Monday in mid-September. She's Mi Vecino's co-founder and chief executive officer. She's Catholic, and she supports abortion rights, like 6 out of 10 Catholics in the U.S., according to the Pew Research Center.
A lot of the folks here are Catholic, and so we understand the core principles of Catholicism, which is that we are gifted free will and conscience from God.
One of Mi Vecino's lead canvassers, Alexander Valdez, spoke to a voter in Palm Beach County who didn't know much about the ballot item.
Today, would you vote in favor of Amendment 4?
I haven't read it in detail, to be honest with you.
Okay, so you'd be unsure.
Most people are not always online following politics. They're just living regular lives. They're doing their job. They're doing what they have to do, but politics does very much affect them.
Mi Vecino has also organized phone banking in partnership with a group called Men for Choice. Mi Vecino's co-founder, Alex Berrios, spoke to male volunteers recently about why they should get involved.
It was really, really important to be able to have choices in life, opportunities in life. And I've worked really, really hard to be able to provide those kind of choices and opportunities for my son.
With just weeks before Election Day, supporters and opponents of Amendment 4 have something in common: the challenge of getting their message to voters and getting them out to vote. I'm Veronica Saragovia in Palm Springs.
Coming up on Capitol Report, we have several pieces on the aftermath of last week's Hurricane Helene. The first has a first-hand connection with a man who saw the storm at its worst.
And you see stuff, you know, debris fields way over on the other side of the road where there isn't supposed to be anything but woods.
We have a story on why we shouldn't focus only on the hurricane cone.
Now, obviously, the closer you are to the eye, that's where the strongest winds are located. But the real weather surrounds the hurricane for several hundred miles out.
Even though Helene made official landfall in Florida's Big Bend, its devastation extended for hundreds of miles, including the Tampa Bay area.
My car is filled with water. My car is total. I left mine here. My whole parking lot, everyone's car was up to the hood, up to the windshield.
And we'll hear why much of the storm damage may not be covered by your regular homeowner's insurance policy.
Flood insurance is not a part of your property insurance policy. It is a separate policy.
There have already been many stories told about loss after Hurricane Helene. WUFT's Ailey Shanes kept in touch with one man from Steinhatchee.
When we first spoke to Jody Griffiths, he was anxious about what the storm would bring.
I live on a small stilted home on Cedar Island. I'm on the coast. I'm not on a canal, so I'm looking at the Gulf. Saying 16 to 18 feet. So if it's, you know, if we get to those levels, we're going to be in trouble in our house. Be honest with you, Ailey, I'd rather it hit us directly, because we don't get the storm surge of it. It's just dead on, honestly. We get east-west shear winds, but we don't get that dirty wall, per se.
And before the storm hit, he said a hurricane wouldn't take him away from the oceanside town he loves.
Ultimately, my wife, you know, it's funny we're having this conversation, because she asked me yesterday, she said, well, if it tears us down, I said, we'll buy a camper and we'll park it right here where we are and we'll live here until we rebuild higher and stronger. I love my home. I love coastal living. I'm not going to give that up for anything or anybody.
We then reached out late on Thursday evening. His anxiety was growing.
I'm in the middle of the woods, but it is, it's gusting. And it's been coming out of the east. I wanted to say it's starting to make a turn, but I'm watching leaves in the yard off the porch lights right now. I was told recently an hour from the eye making landfall. I don't know where we're at with that, but it's definitely picking up. Unfortunately, I think it's going to beeline me on this one. I hope it doesn't, but it's going to be close.
Moments later, he lost power. And after firing up a generator, I was able to get him on the phone again.
I just actually had one of my neighbors that lives in Georgia but has property out at Cedar Island just text me and said that Cedar Key's getting hammered. You know, ultimately, just I hope that people got out with this one. I had a bad gut feeling about it, and I'll know more tomorrow, Ailey, when I get to my house, if I have a house.
A few days after this conversation, Jody Griffiths then spoke with us. He detailed the drive that he took from his brother's house in Steinhatchee, where he and his wife were sheltering, back to his home on Cedar Island.
We dodged a lot of down power lines, a lot of trees, and as I got closer, knowing what we had just left in Steinhatchee, you know, you get that hollow pit gut in your feeling. The corner store, you know, it was completely down. So then you see stuff, you know, debris fields way over on the other side of the road where there isn't supposed to be anything but woods. And, you know, it's surreal. And then it kind of realization hits. And then, you know, as we get closer to Cedar Island and I go in and I see my neighbor's houses aren't on their foundations or their pilings or piers anymore. They're absolutely gone. You have houses in places that aren't supposed to be houses. I mean, they're side of the road. They're in the neighbor's yard. It takes the air out of you.
Griffiths says when he and his wife reached his driveway, his house was gone. And he and his wife were devastated.
And it was clean. My yard's never been cleaner, and it just knocks the air out of you. Like I say, we're fighters, we're survivors, but you don't ever expect to see, you know, back. It's kind of hard to explain the feeling. You know, I go back every day. I feel like I need to be there. It's my home, and then I get there, and there's nothing there. So it's kind of surreal.
Griffiths says for now, he and his wife are living at his brother's place back in Steinhatchee. He filled out paperwork with the American Red Cross and is trying to get a trailer to put on their property on Cedar Island. If they get it, they'll live there until the house is rebuilt, stronger and more resilient, just like Jody and Stacy Griffiths and the rest of the Big Bend community. I'm Ely Shanes in Gainesville.
Of course, Hurricane Helene was huge, and its effects were felt over a large swath of Florida. It brought storm surge to Florida's Gulf Coast from south of Tampa up to the Big Bend and continues to impact residents of states to our north who are dealing with devastating floods. Gina Jordan talked about the storm and other weather effects with Chief Meteorologist Tim Miller of the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network.
Helene was a different storm. I mean, this thing blew up in the Gulf of Mexico, racing off towards the northeast at 25 miles per hour, and the leading western edge of the cloud cover to the far east. This thing was about the size of Colorado or Wyoming. So imagine the state of Colorado racing towards you at 140 mile per hour winds. For a storm of that magnitude to be moving at 25 miles per hour, that's pedal to the metal. So you have this forward momentum and speed. And at that point, any type of wiggle can throw everything off kilter.
And it sounds like, based on the reasons you just gave, it really is important to stay focused on the cone instead of that little line in the middle.
What we have to remember is that that line is the eye of the storm. Now, obviously, the closer you are to the eye, that's where the strongest winds are located. But the real weather surrounds the hurricane for several hundred miles out. And I have to say this, one of the things that we also focus on a lot is the category of the storm. I mean, category 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And I really think that we need to erase that type of thinking, because the only difference between a category 4 hurricane and a category 5 is 1 mile per hour wind speed. I've seen hurricanes that have been Cat 1s that have caused perhaps more damage than a Category 4 based on flooding and based on storm surge. I mean, again, we have to erase the category idea out of our head. And again, you're exactly right with that cone. They call it the cone of uncertainty because it could be in either side of that center line is where that storm could actually land.
Yeah. So Helene was an absolute monster. We have seen flooding devastation that was previously unimaginable in western North Carolina and parts of Tennessee. And we know it was a Category 4 when it hit Taylor County. Do you know how long it stayed a hurricane as it moved up into Georgia?
I do know that it was at least a day that it was an actual hurricane through Georgia, which is unbelievable. Hurricane warnings in central Georgia. I've never heard of that. Atlanta.
Yeah, hurricane received, in Atlanta. I mean, crazy.
Right. Look how far Atlanta is. What I said all along, once this storm makes landfall, that the worst of the storm, you know, we'd obviously get the worst of the storm surge and we'd have our own problems here, but this would be devastating for South Carolina and North Carolina. Normally, once a hurricane reaches landfall, we see it weaken. Number one, you have friction. Number two, it's lost its juice because it's no longer over the warm waters. But this thing kept barreling on through. It didn't care. And it just went right through into Georgia, up into the mountains of Georgia and Tennessee and North Carolina. It's just wild.
Yeah. And we've been warned for a couple few years now about the hot waters in the Gulf. Is that something that we can expect to see for a while?
Yeah, well, it's pretty typical. Plus, we also have to realize that the continental shelf is rather shallow. So we're talking about 400 feet. I mean, 400 feet, that seems like a lot. Well, not really, because once it drops off, then it goes into about 1,200, 1,800 feet. So the shallow water, obviously the shallower the water, the warmer that water is going to be. I mean, there were water temperatures off the coast of Tampa Bay that were at 90 degrees.
We've been told that the Gulf is just really hotter than ever and has been for a couple of years. Is that what you're seeing? And do you think this is a cyclical thing, or what do you think about that?
Well, I do think it is warmer than it has been. and will continue to be so. We often refer to climate change as being the reason for this, and that could very well be.
Yeah, well, it sounds like we need to focus on resiliency and dealing with rising waters along the coast, dealing with stronger storms, dealing with tornadoes where we're not used to having them.
Yeah, that's true. And plus, we have an increase of a 50% population around coastal areas around the United States. So we are somewhat inviting trouble, I think, sometimes. The longer we build along the coast, as much as we build. Florida, by the way, has some excellent building codes. Still, if we're going to build and have a population that continues to build along the coastal areas, we have to be prepared for the outcome of what could be a disaster if indeed a hurricane makes landfall in a populated area.
That was Florida Public Radio Chief Meteorologist Tim Miller speaking with Gina Jordan. It's going to be a long road to recovery for Pinellas County's beach communities after Hurricane Helene devastated that area. The storm didn't make landfall there, but it delivered high winds and storm surge. The storm killed at least 5 people in the county, which includes cities like St. Petersburg and Clearwater. WUSF's Stephanie Colombini surveyed some of the damage and talked to people who chose not to evacuate about their experience riding out the storm.
Andrew Swan didn't think things would be this bad. He was watching a friend's house in Madeira Beach. Forecasters warned the area could get up to 8 feet of storm surge, but Swan thought the house might only flood a few inches. Then the water started pouring in.
It started getting higher and higher, and so I was taking all this important paperwork and trying to get it as high as I could. And, eventually got about to chest deep.
Swan spent the night alone with his thoughts as he waded through water, trying to protect what items in the home he could as Helene raged outside.
I was thinking about a girl. I was thinking about my parents and just life and what priorities are.
He ended up sleeping on a kitchen counter with his legs draped over the stove, wrapped in whatever towels he hadn't used to sop up water. The next morning, Swan called the woman he'd thought about all night to tell her he was okay and how much he cared. Then he walked outside to look at the damage.
I mean, everybody's just kind of in shock and just trying to pick up the pieces. Nobody really expected it like this.
The Tampa Bay region often gets spared from the worst types of hurricane devastation. And officials like Pinellas County Sheriff Bob Gualtieri say they had a hard time convincing people who did okay in previous storms that this time could be different. And it was.
I can't think of a time ever that Pinellas County has experienced the surge that we experienced.
He described the initial aftermath along the beaches like a war zone. Piles of sand 5 feet high lined the roadways, making them impassable. Debris of all sorts, like trees, hotel furniture, boats, and electrical equipment, posed hazards everywhere. I was able to get just to the edge of the barrier islands, and even there, the flood and wind damage was significant. That's where I met folks who were stranded in their homes during the storm as they walked inland past cleanup crews and emergency vehicles. John Youssef and his girlfriend Anne Louise Abbott were looking for a ride to a hotel for the night until it was safe to come back.
My car is filled with water. My car is total. I left mine here. My whole parking lot, everyone's car was up to the hood, up to the windshield.
Pretty much any vehicle that you see over here still parked is totaled.
They rode out Helene and Youssef's second floor apartment in St. Pete Beach. They started getting really scared as the water rose and the wind picked up, but it was too dangerous for them to leave. The storm surge didn't reach their apartment, so they helped others fleeing for safety.
There was people walking in the middle of the night at its worst.
Yeah.
This guy had this lady wrapped around him like a kid, and he kept falling in the water, so we kind of helped him up the stairs, and he kind of seek refuge with us. And a couple of people were doing that across the street as well.
There was another couple that came from the neighborhood over where the lady's head only stood out of the water, and she had her cat on top of her head, and I guess her husband was carrying all the stuff.
Yeah, he was carrying all the stuff. Mm-hmm. So they came and brought them up.
Youssef, Abbott, and their neighbors offered people towels, water, chairs, and company. They spent the night watching the storm submerge cars, blow out power sources, and sweep away objects on their street, like the dumpster outside their apartment. Nobody felt like strangers, they said, just a community helping each other survive. Tragically, not everyone made it out alive after Helene. Pinellas County Emergency Management Director Kathy Perkins choked up with tears as she recognized those who died in the storm.
It's hard
but we will continue to recover as a community. And we will do everything in our power to continue the restoration efforts for our residents.
Perkins says it's going to take a long time for the area to heal, but she says the county's doing everything they can to help. I'm Stephanie Colombini in Tampa.
You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, as we already heard, a lot of Floridians had their lives upended by damage from Hurricane Helene. Tristan Woods reports that insurance experts are saying the storm surge and rain damage from the hurricane underpin the importance of flood insurance in Florida.
The Category 4 storm left thousands without power and, in many cases, homeless. One of the worst-hit areas in Florida was Keaton Beach, where the hurricane impacted over 90% of homes. Another hard-hit region was the Tampa Bay area. Storm surges there made tens of thousands of homes unlivable. Andrew Swan told WUSF that he was watching a home in the area when the storm surge got up to 8 feet.
I mean, everybody's just kind of in shock and just trying to pick up the pieces. Nobody really expected it like this.
The widespread scale of the damage in Florida has some chattering that it will lead to widespread property insurance rate increases. But insurance expert Lisa Miller of Miller & Associates doesn't think so. She says most of the damage from Helene isn't covered by property insurance, because property insurance alone doesn't cover flooding and water damage.
Flood insurance is not a part of your property insurance policy. It is a separate policy, and most of the time you buy that from the federal government through what is called the National Flood Insurance Program, NFIP. Your insurance agent, of course, is the ticket to buying that insurance.
Miller says the threat of serious storm surges due to hurricanes means flood insurance should be a priority for Florida homeowners.
My motto is this. If your driver's license says Florida, you're going to flood. And I would highly recommend that those of you who do not have flood insurance buy it and do everything you can to buy it. And I have seen and my heart breaks for the thousands of people here in Tampa Bay that don't have it. They've lost everything they have.
To purchase flood insurance, call your insurance company or insurance agent. The same person who sells your home or auto insurance. I'm Tristan Wood.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Adrian Andrews, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Margie Menzel, and Tristan Wood. Thanks also to Veronica Saragovia, Ailey Shanes, and Stephanie Colombini. Technical support for Capitol Report comes from Evan Rossi, and I'm Tom Flanagan. We hope you'll join us again next week on air and online for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.